Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, here in the Rugby Dungeon. Look at this. Even though it's a bank holiday Monday, we're here making sure there's a podcast on a Monday for our American and overseas listeners and for those fine people working on a bank holiday.
Aren't Americans on their bank holiday? Because it's Memorial Day.
On Memorial Day, of course.
Oh.
Well, in honour of... Well,
Murph, of course, Captain Murph.
In honour of Captain Murphy,
it?
We'll be doing the Murph at CrossFit tomorrow, JB. You going to join in? You can't with your leg. Don't do it because you'll shame me and JB when you.
Yeah,
you would.
Well, I don't do Murph as well because, as in, I don't do the weighted vest. I'll do 100 chin-ups as I do them. I'll do a couple hundred press-ups and 300 squats and
a mile run at each end.
I'll probably do it one day this week.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, but what I'm saying was, we're here.
More importantly, we're here to talk about rugby, not about CrossFit. But we will talk about CrossFit, so don't worry about that.
Memorial Day in America, this podcast is still out. Bank Holiday in the UK, podcast is still out. If you appreciate the fact we're the only podcast there for you, 52 weeks of the year, nearly 10 years, then you can support us by hitting subscribe, by telling a mate, or by going to patreon.com/eggchasers, where there's more content and more ways that you can keep the lights on and keep this operation going. Thank you very much. I'm Tim. JB, again, OnlyFans ready with his feet.
Exactly. How are we, boys?
And there's Phil.
Hello. Very good, thank you.
Finals weekend. We never just talk about the rugby. We'll meander all over the shop. But just generally, without going into too much detail on the specific games, two fantastic finals, it has to be said.
I got it. Yeah, I thought the URC final in particular was great. It was an absolute thunderous final.
It was a real arm wrestle, wasn't it,
yeah.
That one?
So was the Premiership.
In a different way. Yeah. A lot more dog in the URC. Premiership a bit more free-flowing.
It felt, you know, of the two finals, the URC final was the higher quality of the two because it was just so attritional. It just felt like both those teams were just so battle-hardened, which is not what I think of when I think of the URC, even remotely. The Premiership final was also a very good game of rugby.
Yeah, it was outstanding. So we'll definitely be getting into those games. I just think it's important to start, and this is the yin to the yang at the minute, isn't it? You've got two great finals, two trophies being given out, two very happy sets of fans and players at these showpiece events. But then we've got to acknowledge the fact that as we talk right now, or as you listen on, if you listen on a Monday, this could be the final day that London Irish are trading.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know where this is going. Have you heard, or do you get any sense about where this is going?
I do get a sense of where it's going, a very strong sense of where it's going. I'm going to make a suggestion here.
Yeah.
So a few weeks ago, we were talking about Saracens previewing them for the final, and you made a very wise point, Tim, which is just enjoy the rugby. Yeah. So why don't we talk about the final, enjoy only the rugby, and then we can talk about what the wider permutations are for the Premiership.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, we're going to have to talk about the crowd, we're going to have to talk about where these two teams go next, we're going to have to talk about London Irish, we're going to have to talk about the league, the lack of teams, we're going to have to talk about all of this stuff.
Okay.
Because,
all right,
there's a lot to get into.
Yeah, fair. So, well, let's start with the Premiership final then, at Twickenham. And the big takeaway for me was a newsflash: Owen Farrell is very, very good at rugby.
he had a good game, didn't he?
He was awesome.
Do you know what I thought? Like, the big story is on this. Is Saracens telling you all season who they are and then exactly following up that blueprint perfectly? And it is so rare to be so good that you can tell somebody what you're going to do. They've openly told everyone and then do it. So the Saracen's story this year is we're going to reinvent our game and then we're going to beat you in the last 20. And what did they do to Sale? They did exactly the same as they've done to everybody else. And I think that is quite something. Because people say all the time that they're like, we're going to change how we play. And they never do. They just end up playing however they play. Saracens are so meticulous with what they do. They did exactly as they said.
And to dovetail with that, Maro Itoje's comments after the game were, this is the best coach team he has ever been a part of.
Well, he's only ever been a part of one team.
England. And he's had lots of iterations of Saracens. As you say, European champion winning Saracen sides. I think they have squeezed... Certainly in the domestic title. No, actually. When you compare the squad they have now that's just won the Premiership, it's a strong squad compared to other Premiership squads, but you have to... The comparison with other European squads is relevant.
Yes, it is.
I think, relatively speaking, they've squeezed as much out of this Saracens team as they have out of any Saracens team.
I completely agree.
Yeah, I agree with that. Noting, obviously, for fans of other clubs that they... Not only did previous teams they squeeze more out of it, they also spent more as well.
Yeah.
Well, so people will be going mad about that.
Well, yeah, but I was comparing the European.
You are quite right.
I think there's sort of two narratives going on here, which is how these two teams have ended up where they are. Now, let's fully acknowledge that they're both great teams and that they deserve to be here. But there are some peculiarities about both of them.
The best two teams in the league this year.
Yeah. It's
definitely this season. The best two teams got to the final.
So the peculiarities are as follows, right? Saracens can get world superstars playing for them because of loyalty from before the salary cap scandal. In my mind...
Because they produced a lot of those world talent.
They did, but like, there's still Elliot Daly there. I mean, he was bought from Wasps. There's still like the Maitlands, there's Owen Farrell, and there's Maro Itoje. Only one can be a... marquee player, and both of them, to my mind, look like they should be in Racing outfits. But, you know, here they are. You know, the Vunipolas are still there. So they've got a lot of buy-in from lads who were there prior to the scandal, and they're still there. They are ageing, but they're good enough to win. So, in a way, Saracens get a bit of a discount. Ben Earl, Lazowski, Tompkins, they're still there. They're all still there.
Malins for now.
Ezekwe, you know? Jamie George. Like, they've just got some amazing, amazing players who are very loyal to that team. Eventually, that generation will die out and they're going to have to deal with their squad the same way everyone else does. Sale are slightly different. Sale had the foresight, and this is quite technical, to redo all of their contracts immediately as COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So immediately they gave everyone a bit of a pay cut. Everyone signed up to it. They had them all signed up and done. But they did it before the grandfathering date, which meant that they could then get a further 25% discount, which is why they can keep this amazing squad together. It's why they can go out and afford Johnny Hill, and they can afford George Ford, and they can afford, well, basically what they've got. So you've got these two peculiarities in these two teams, which make them much better than everyone else, because they can just afford better players for now.
Yeah.
Eventually, they're going to go through the Exeter process, and it's going to be painful.
Well, probably by the time that happens, the salary cap will be elevated again next season after this.
But then
one.
They're in competition.
Yes.
So like, then everyone's going to be buying the same.
Maybe not everyone. Not everyone will spend up to the salary cap. Maybe even Sale won't spend up to the salary cap.
I have a feeling they might.
Sale. Things are very fickle at Sale, just because they don't own their ground, so they only get a fraction of the revenue.
This is true.
Yeah, we'll see. Because historically, in all those years that Diamond squeezed more out of the squad than many other people would have done, they were spending under the salary cap for a long period of time, weren't they?
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because from the point that you referenced, that COVID re-signing of the contracts, they've actually let some superstars go as well.
Mm-hmm.
They had Lude, they had Faf... There are probably others that I'm not thinking of at the moment who they allowed to go.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you would you call Van Rensburger superstar? I mean, he came as a superstar.
He came and he could
he left
have
as
been
a journeyman.
Yes. Yeah.
There are one or two others, but I can't think of them off the top of my head.
Yeah. There's other people who've gone. But yeah, they didn't manage to keep all the superstars, but they retained enough to be good enough.
Yeah.
And they play in a nice way. They've got a very tough pack. To be able to bring off Ewan Ashman, Bevan Rod, Connor Eustace, and off the bench for the front row, not many teams can offer that much depth in a key position for games like this.
So, Sale, in my mind, had in their sights Saracens' last quarter resurgence. I don't know if you felt this. I felt they emptied their bench early to try and overcome that. That's what I felt. So they brought on Rafi, they brought on Ashman, basically emptied the entire bench. And it nearly worked. It nearly worked. But Saracens are just...
It's 80 minutes, so it's never down to one singular point of failure, but I wonder how many times Joe Carpenter's going to replay letting that ball bounce.
Well, I mean, Joe Carpenter's a great player.
He's had a great season.
I think he's going to be the next England fullback. You don't, I do.
I'm not convinced about that. But
so the next capped England fullback who's not already capped, who's it going to be?
Okay. Yeah, all right.
I think it's Joe Carpenter.
I really like Joe Carpenter. I think he's a quality player. He might get a cap.
I think he'll get a cap. Sure, he'll get a cap. But here's my point. First final. And it was clearly not Alex Goode's first rodeo.
Yeah.
And he was ace. A lot of times he was ace. He 34 was years old, or 38, or however old he is.
150.
160 years old.
He caught the opening catch. From the very early stage, it was like, he just made the right decisions.
Yeah.
And never flustered.
So much time on the ball.
Yeah. Yes, that's it, isn't it? He's always stepping inside. He's always got time on the ball. He's never getting caught. I wonder if that's how he's managed to get to age 35 and still be so effective, because he doesn't, kind of like Floyd Mayweather, he doesn't get hit.
Yeah.
It's a good shout, actually. And what Saracens did, and he definitely was a big part of this, they actually didn't play, as you pointed out, they didn't play conservatively. They were offloading when it probably wasn't on. Loads and loads.
Yeah.
And over 80 minutes, that made a difference, particularly against Sale, who were trying to line you up and hit you, trying to line you up as a man and hit you. And they've really evolved the way they play, and I love the way Saracens play.
Sale trying to hit you, that actually, Saracens used that well. For the Malins try was a great example. Yes. Faz draws the... I can't remember who jumped. Smashes Faz.
Really late lift.
But he just, right at the last second, to the hole that's created by him getting smashed, and Malins goes through.
And the best fly halves do that. And Farrell looks flatter, taking the ball flatter, than I've basically ever seen him.
Yeah. Mm.
And Johnny Sexton, that's one of the things he really does, and I think Leicester missed with Ross Byrne, is you have to be unbelievably brave to play like that as a fly half.
Mm-hmm. And because you're going to get hit.
George Ford is a tiny bit quiet, I felt. First quarter, certainly.
I tend to agree. I think a lot of the gains that Sale had was through their forwards, through their pack, and obviously George Ford needs to get them in the right place, which he did, but he was quite quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see much evidence of what I've really liked about Sale recently. So it's this pressure game, it's a forward based game, but when they need to attack, they're very fluid with ball in hand last quarter. Whatever reason it was, they were just missing it.
Well, the rule book try was good, and I thought the Rod try where Curry makes the break down the right wing,
that was a brilliant pass from Rod over the top to Tom Curry, and then Bevan Rod, first man there, who's basically he was the best scrum half on the pitch.
I
saw Bevan Rod on Thursday in Trafford Centre. Had a chat with him.
I saw him on Wednesday walking down Burton Road.
He said.
I've not got a Bevan Rod
story.
Anecdote recently.
Come on, Phil.
And then they're all off to Marbella today.
They're all gone to Marbs.
Yeah.
Fair play.
So, another thing I'd like to point out is, what a remarkable season for so many lads at Sale. So, obviously they'd have loved to have won this, and they were so close. I mean, you score 27 points in the final. Yeah.
Joe Carpenter, Aaron Reid, Tom Roebuck, Gus Waugh.
I mean, that's a hell of a season, isn't it?
Sam Dugdale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just...
Carpenter and Roebuck, for me, I really rate both of them. I think they're excellent.
Not Gus Waugh, no? They're Gus Waugh.
I do rate Gus Waugh, not as highly as those two, though.
I disagree. I just think he's got it.
I don't think he'll get... I don't think he'll get an England cap.
No, because he's Scottish.
Yeah, he'll be English qualified as well.
Yeah, he will be QP. I think he'll run into a bit of an issue when he does play for Scotland, because someone's going to have to want him, because you can't get to Premiership. He has driven that team on his first year as a starter, he's driven that team. Like, little bits of experience really impressed me. Do you see when he milked the penalty?
For the first score.
Yeah, he tucks his own feet underneath the Saracens player and starts shouting at the ref. Yeah, penalty, have it. Like, that's...
Wasn't impressed by Johnny Hill diving.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Towards the end. Yeah.
I missed that as well. I was watching it in Walkabout in Glasgow. So
lots of distractions.
Was there much demand for the Premiership final in Walkabout?
Well, there was no Premiership football on. There was Luton. I suppose there was the Luton.
That was afterwards.
Final. Oh, right, okay.
There are two screens with the football on. The biggest screen was showing the final day of the Bundesliga with Dortmund and Bayern.
The biggest screen in a Scottish pub was showing German football.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And there was a lot of out on the streets. A lot of the Celtic fans, because they had the earlier kickoff, 12:30 kickoff. Glasgow was absolutely heaving with white and green shirts and flares going off. And
really.
I mean, they win it every other year historically. Anyway, like it's 50% of the time going to win.
By the way, sorry, I'm almost doing it because you just reminded me. I'm almost doing it by saying this when I should just say nothing. But can we have no talk of any other flares? Because I don't want to give anyone any oxygen.
No, I want to talk about
it. No, I don't want to give anyone any oxygen.
No, I'll tell you why I want to talk about it. I thought it was genuinely scary. Because I was watching that, and because it's an orange flare, I was like, is that a flame? Like, for that split second, I thought that was really quite a frightening scene. Because I thought watching a terrorist attack. For that split second, it was the most bizarre thing. But yeah, I agree with you. They're absolute scumbags who don't deserve any attention.
Yes.
I just wish they got more severely dealt with. Like death or something. That's what I'd like.
Yeah, people have been sort of parading and celebrating a picture of Tom Curry holding his shorts. It's like, no.
It's not cool, is it?
No. Well, if Tom Curry had him by the... just one arm carrying the guy off, then I would have liked it.
Yeah, I mean, if he high-shotted him, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Just right across the chops. Bang!
Can you imagine the temptation?
No, I can't.
I mean, it's quite amazing. The fact they restrained themselves.
Who would you
I'm
most rather high-shot? Would it be the protester on Saturday, or would it be the guy who confronted Billy Vanapola in these shorts? I would love him to get blindsided. Wham! Dead.
Dead.
Maybe not dead.
Maybe not dead.
No, dead. Dead. Instantly dead.
On the moments during the game, refereeing, I thought Luke Pearce, his handling of the penalty try was absolutely spot on. Like,
yep.
Immediately, instant, no need to, yep.
No conversation, just made the call.
And overall, because I was watching it without sound, didn't hear any of the stuff, the backwards and forwards for the tries, the...
One of the things I thought I was going to say, I was trying to remember to say on this, and I'm glad you reminded me, was because England aren't going to be in a World Cup final. Luke Pearce is doing everything he can to be the referee for a World Cup final.
Luke Pearce, excellent.
I think he's outstanding.
I thought he was excellent. Yeah. If I was going to be particularly picky, there was a few flops off the feet at Rooks.
Yeah.
But I think generally they were of no consequence, which... Part of me wants you to penalise it even when there is no consequence, just be better. Just don't, like, John O'Ross did two really blatant ones that were totally unnecessary. Mm. Lupus let them go. I'm okay with that, but sometimes I think they should be penalised because it's just sloppy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He was decisive on scrum pens, and no one seemed to have any issue with it. He got those the try calls. He deferred to his TMO in the right way. Fairly. Just the way he speaks to the players, I think.
The Premiership's got many problems. One of the problems they don't have is referees. I think the Premiership referees are the best in the world.
The best.
So at least they've got one thing right.
Even a stop clock and all that.
Yeah. Let's talk about build-ups this game. Because this wound me up somewhat. I mean, wound me up.
Okay, well, before you get to a negative, because we've got a bunch of emails.
Okay.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. I thought it'd be fair to... just one thing. A few people have pointed this out. Knowing how we love weighing players and stats, Andrew McNaught being one, and I'll get the name of the others who've done it, and Andrew's in Canada.
Which part of Canada? Do we know?
No, he hasn't given any details on that.
Generic Canada.
Generic Canada. So, okay. A huge landmass, so could be anywhere. He said he was looking at the Saracens' website to try and find the team sheet for Saturday and ended up looking at the squad stats, where Callum Hunter-Hill is listed as 233 kilograms.
That's a big man.
233. Wow.
Goodness me.
In fact, they're all in the region of 200 kgs.
What?
Yeah, getting up to La Rochelle sizes soon. I think, obviously, someone's meant to do pounds.
Yeah.
Because how much is 233 pounds?
It's not heavy enough.
No, that's not heavy enough for Callum Hunter-Hill, is it?
No.
No, you're right.
250 is about 17 stone.
I think someone's just done a one instead of a two instead of a one.
But
133 kgs.
No, yeah, that is really massive.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be centimetres for height, is it?
233 was too tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sam Rowley has also put a screenshot of Jackson Ray's profile on the website. He had a great game as well in his last
I think
one.
He's one of the most underrated players the Premiership scene, actually.
And that was a lovely moment when he went off and Luke Pearce, you wouldn't have heard this, but Luke Pearce just ran up to him and said, just well done, Jackson, congratulations, as he walked off. It was just a tiny little moment, but he's like, oh, I love rugby.
Well, we were actually having the conversation in the pub. He might be one of the most important Premiership players of all time because he's just built, so he can play three positions.
Yeah,
he's just below England level. He's never received a call, and he can cover so well. And he's got good leadership, great experience. He's a really, really valuable player.
So
even though he's probably not the best player.
And before you say anything, I'm just going to say the one thing I'll say about Jackson Ray is he gave me a pair of his boots. I donated them to the Rugby Dungeon to be put on a shelf, and JB gave them to someone.
But do you know what? They're out in the wild playing rugby.
Where they want to be.
Where they want to be. You can't cage boots.
Had you said, Tim, do you mind if I give your boots that Jackson Ray gave you to someone else?
This is the same Tim Cocker that wanted to take boots off a small child last week because he wouldn't wear them.
Yes, yeah, fair shout, actually.
So I'm just on the Saracens website, Ali Davis is listed at 194 kg.
Jeez, that's a bit. That's Mike Phillips' size.
that is like
late stage Piri Whippu.
That's like the Mountain, Hapthor Bjornsson or Brian Shaw from World's Strongest Man.
How much does Brian Shaw weigh?
I looked at this recently. He's 200 kg.
No, not possible.
It is possible.
Good.
I mean, he's about 6'10".
That's double my size.
They're unbelievable, the World's Strongest Man size and weight.
Do you think he could beat a gorilla? No, he couldn't beat a gorilla. A gorilla would rip his face off. But
yeah.
Still.
Yeah, yeah.
Still. A chimp would still rip his face
off. Yeah, exactly.
Peter Shaw has emailed, contact tedchasers@gmail.com. Very entertaining final. Depth and grit shown by each team was amazing. He mentions Bevan Rod and Theo Dan. I love Theo Dan at Bolter for the World Cup.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt.
Very
good player.
Third hooker spot. He had a fine game. Malins was class. Farrell was masterfully in control. Agreed.
Yeah.
Ben Earl on his knees, overcome with emotion at the final whistle, was a lovely moment. Curry was amazing, even with the yellow card. Agreed on all counts.
Yeah, agreed. And the yellow card, exactly the right decision from Luke Pearce. I don't really blame Tom Curry because it's just instinct, but it's right, and he was excellent.
Yeah.
He was lovely in the watch team, running free in the wide channels.
Peter's just summarising lots of lovely moments. Tuilagi was a force of nature.
Tuilagi had his first Tuilagi game.
Yeah, he had a great
very first one.
Yeah, he says his hairstyle still needs help, but picking up his medal with his daughter was a lovely moment. John O'Ross's interview and post-game hugs was emotional to watch. Yeah, John O'Ross, not a man who gives any emotion away. I've interviewed him a number of times, and he's not even
in person, off the record.
No.
No emotion.
No emotion.
He also sleeps in the fridge.
What?
Yeah, have you not seen Universal Soldier?
Sale had a remarkable year and an amazing foundation to build on. And that's a true neutral talking. They've found the right balance of homegrown talent and massive South Africans. Yeah, agreed. You're nailing it. Saracens deserve winners. URC, what the heck? Oh, so that's going on that. And I just want to make sure I cover off the emails. Daniel Palmer, Saracens are a cut above. How good is Owen Farrell? And he just wanted to highlight the crazy dynasty of coaches, past and present, that organisation has produced. It started with Brendan Venter, but Eddie Jones, Paul Gustard, Andy Farrell, Alex Sanderson, Steve Borthwick, Richard Wigglesworth, Kelly Brown, and that Joe Shaw is a serious talent as well now.
Yeah.
And he says, I'd challenge anyone to argue that Mark McCall isn't the godfather of Northern Hemisphere coaching.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Probably fair.
I think we said before on the pod that when people have suggested Mark McCall for England or Ireland, but England job, he's probably more valuable to England in the Saracens job because of the sheer number of both players and coaches.
Weird, isn't it?
He's influenced.
It's so strange that it's pivoted back to Borthwick. Obviously, it's gone to Borthwick now. McCall will always be mentioned. But the guy I always think of, the guy who missed the boat on this completely, I don't know if he ever wanted it, but Rob Baxter. Rob Baxter was a shoo-in for years and years and years and years. The thing he's not the England coach now. It's actually crazy considering what he's achieved.
Mm. You know? What I like about Rob Baxter is that he isn't... I'm sure he's a very ambitious man, but he has other motivations, and being happy and being around his family and being around his being around Devon seems to be very, very close to his heart. And and also he has said he doesn't know if he'd want the politics, all the politics that he'd have to deal with.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of it. yeah, I agree with all those points, actually. I was going to say, there's ambition, isn't there, when you just sort of, you climb your way in the quickest possible manner to where you want to be. And there's another type of ambition where you grind it out and you actually achieve it with the club that you want to, which is what he's done. Do you know, which is why I think he's more valuable. But, you know, he might not suit the England job. You don't know.
Mm. And finally, final email from the time being is one that's just arrived. He must know that we're getting together to record. Dato Sandroshvili.
Oh, yeah.
Has just sent a picture of a Negroni and just simply with the subject title, "To Your Health."
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So you wanted to say about the build-up to the game and all that?
The build-up to the game. I mean, the Premiership is just such an incompetent organisation. There was a real... I want to talk about the Stephen Jones article, which he wrote today, because it's brilliant. I thought he hit all the key points on the Premiership and gave quite a balanced argument. So maybe read that later in accompaniment to this podcast. I'd just like to say, the build-up to the Premiership, what do we have here? We've got two phenomenal teams. If Mario Itoje is telling you, and he must have told someone in the press for you to hear it, Tim, that this is the best coach team he's ever been part of.
Said it on BT Sport after the game.
Mm. Right, okay. Like, these are things we need to be talking about, right? Sale have got the most physically abrasive pack in the Premiership, bar none. They're absolute mutants. They're coached by a Northerner. That Northerner used to be part of Saracens. Saracens have got this incredible redemption arc where they got to the final last year, they lost, but they've come from the Championship. They've got all the cheating behind them now, fair or unfair. They've finally got back to the summit. These are things worth talking about. And yet all the Premiership can do is talk about colourblind fans. It blows my mind how incompetent these idiots are. And furthermore, they were giving away tickets to their showpiece event prior to the game. So I don't know if you saw this, we were sent a link, and the link basically used the NHS blue light system. It's not blue light, but anyone who works in emergency services could get a ticket for the Premiership final for free.
You didn't have to verify that you were that type of individual. Anyone could do
so. People are saying, oh, well, they're not giving it away, it's part of the blue light scheme. And I know I'm not allowed to criticise individuals exactly, but the ex-head of Premiership comms, thank God he's the ex-head, because he has done more to undermine the sport than anyone. I mean, God knows how much they used to pay him to undermine the sport. It's like, we're so proud of this. How can you be proud of giving away tickets? Because I get it if they're saying, look, you work for the NHS, you can have 10% off entrance to Twickenham. That seems fair to me. That seems like a reasonable thing. But to give away tickets and to be proud of it, how can you be proud of giving away things to your showpiece event? And aren't you just saying, like, hey, if you're a fan and you've supported this team all year long and you've dug deep into your pocket, and maybe you can't quite afford it because of cost of living and all the rest of it, but you don't have the right social job for the ex-head of Premiership comms or whoever it is, you're not as worthwhile because, as, I don't know, the NHS secretary. It's absolute nonsense. Premiership rugby are just so all over the place with everything that they do. And they have the nerve to try and defend it. Like, we're proud of what we're doing. They should be utterly ashamed. Utterly ashamed.
I was just thinking of, would anyone else do this? And the NFL for the Super Bowl will always have like a little pocket, a little token, a little token pocket of people that get from whether it's military or
pick them, you know,
or emergency services, and they have a little pocket that they then highlight before the game.
Yeah,
a very very American thing to do. I think the difference was that this felt like, and this is where I agree with you, this felt to me like, oh shit, we've got we have got acres of Twickenham empty. Let's give some away, because it was given away when you looked at the options you had to buy tickets in, it looked like it was being done on a massive scale.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was right across the board. I think it is more that side of things. It's Twickenham. If anything in an empty stadium looks awful,
yeah, there's dreadful.
Dreadful visuals. They just wanted to fill the stadium, and they don't have the luxury of the Super Bowl. If it was in a 500,000 seater stadium, there's which doesn't exist, they would still be, not have enough tickets.
I guess the issue I have with that, again, living in Manchester, is any Sale Sharks fan that went down, if they might have got slightly cheaper tickets if they bought their ticket at the start of the season and speculated on just having a day out and hoping their team were there. That's where the cheap tickets went for people that just do it as a day out regardless, which I used to do when I was a kid.
Yep.
Newbury Rugby Club used to send a couple of busloads of people every year to the Pilkington Cup final, it was then. Anyway, but there was Sale Sharks fans spending 100 quid, Saracens fans spending 100 quid.
My neighbour went, right? So my neighbour on Saturday morning saw me, oh, you're going on to Twickenham? And I sheepishly said, no, I'm not. But like 100 quid train, you know, accommodation overnight.
It's a big outlet.
Beers in Twickenham.
That's the bit where...
But if you're the receptionist or a delivery driver in fact, anyone in the NHS, you get for 2 quid.
Well, you didn't need to verify that either.
But the tickets were... Like, I went on without that link.
Yeah.
And the tickets were just 15 quid.
Some of them were, but they only go to 8. But it's just principle.
Yeah, but
if 10% off is fine.
But the...
Is so close to an event to make so many tickets available either free or heavily discounted when you have people that have spent hundreds.
Yes, yeah. And it's not just for
to follow
one game.
Their team.
Yeah, and it's not just one game, is it? It'll be the season ticket that they've bought. It'll be the way tickets that they've bought. It'll be all these things, but you have to pay full price because you're not the right type of person for the Premiership, and that really annoys me. That should annoy anyone, really.
Yeah. So in trying to deal with the optics of having a stadium that looked, my sister and my dad. And my stepmom went, and they wouldn't have gone if it wasn't for these particular tickets.
Yep.
So it worked from that point of view. So, but to counter the optics of having a heavily empty Twickenham Stadium, I just think that the optics in other ways would. I'd be really hacked off if I spent hundreds of pounds to take my family down.
Isn't the answer not to give away lots of tickets to people that you think are socially worthy? As you know, ex-premiership head of comms thinks, but just set the ticket price so you can generate enough demand for everybody. I mean, that sounds.
I think that's what they tried, because there were so many £15 ones available, so they had tried to do that, but evidently
just keep going lower.
£15.
Had it been Northampton v Leicester, it wouldn't have. They wouldn't have done. They wouldn't have this. Not to the scale.
No, agreed.
Not to the scale they did.
But they did. With the sunshine, with a nearly full Twickenham, it did look ace.
So I had a really interesting bit of thinking, I guess you'd call it. And we were on the NBA today, and they were saying, this person was saying, is a pundit on the NBA, which is, you can tell a sport is in trouble when there's more value in the teams than there is in the sport. So they had some of the highest ratings for an NBA game in a long time, which was the Warriors versus... I think the Lakers. I think the reason is they're two of the biggest biggest market teams, mm-hmm. and the argument was, well, once that's over, there'll be no more ratings because the interest is in teams and not the sport. Mm-hmm. I would say Premiership Rugby needs to have a hard look at itself, because the actual brand of the Premiership, as much as I've loved it for years, is non-existent. There are fans of teams, which is why Leicester and Northampton could fill it out, but as fans of the actual event, it's non-existent. Like, it just did not show up on anyone's radar. Because the sport has been so badly mismanaged. So there is still a hardcore fan base.
There's an argument that rugby, it was ever thus. Like, 2000 and... What World Cup was it when we first started doing the podcast?
It was...
Well, it was one,
it wasn't the we back ourselves at home one. It was one before that.
No, it can't, well, we have, been, it can't have been 2015.
Yeah,
it can't have been
2013. So.
Oh, maybe it was...
We always back ourselves at home.
That's 2015.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just talking about something that happened historically, not something that actually happened on the pod. It might have been 2007. It might have been 2011. Where was 2011?
Is New Zealand.
New Zealand. Maybe it was that. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Point being is I've had a conversation about... It was obviously after I moved to Manchester, so it could have been 2011. But trying to find somewhere in Manchester to watch a World Cup quarter final, and I had to watch it on a very small, like 20-inch screen upstairs in Walkabout, whilst Vanarama football was on the massive screen.
Yeah, it's true.
So rugby's always had that issue, really. That's not new.
But it should. I mean, there are plenty of blueprints out there. I mean, you don't have to go far to find other sports doing good things. You don't even have to go far in rugby union. I've got to say, and it hurts my heart to say it. It sincerely hurts me. The URC are making strides. Whoever's in charge there, they seem to be doing some good things. There are some really unique things on the coverage, the way they talk about the game. And I don't enjoy saying that, but the URC is producing a better product now than the Premiership. And that's really, really disturbing.
You've not really watched any URC, mate.
I've seen a lot of the playoffs and I've been massively impressed. Mm. Massively
impressed. Well, I think if you watch the playoffs of any competition, you'd say that's...
But I'll give you an example, right? I'll give you an example.
And if you just... if you were like a casual rugby fan and you just tuned in to BT Sport or ITV yesterday, you would have thought, that looks great.
Oh, I don't have much of an issue with the... Well, I have a huge issue with some of the BT Sport coverage. But the actual in-game coverage, the way that the comms team handle it, the production of BT Sport is top notch. I think it's better than the URC equivalent. I'll give you an example of something like URC are doing now. Dion Ferry's stats came up and he's got an overall player value for the entire league. I don't know how that's done, but I love the fact that they're thinking about that and they've got a defence value for him, an attack value, a skill value, and then his overall value. And it's just I don't know how they've come to that, but it's just a cool thing to make you think, oh Christ, that's good. Now, the more information that they can give you, the better. And at least they're thinking of things. I've not seen anything like that from the Premiership because they're too busy trying to keep their head above water.
I do stuff like that. I didn't see that, but stuff like that would annoy me. I'd like to see what it actually means.
Yeah.
I want real stats. I don't want someone's opinion on fake stats.
I work in broadcasting, but fundamentally, you can have all the whiz-bang gizmos, stats, clever things you want, but it's how good are the games?
Yeah, well, glad you asked, because the URC final was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. Did you watch this?
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, I mean... I thought the way Munster went about their business. I tell you what, I've not noticed about Munster before, because I've not watched them much, so I'll put my hands up. If this is what they've been doing all year, I've just missed it. But the fluidity of the movement of the ball when it's an open play is ridiculously good. The angles that those boys cut, the way that they sort of pull the ball back. I mean, it is fundamentally the same as what every team does, but it's better. And they just do it over and over again. The pressure that they can create from possession is really impressive.
Well, and it's all built on the fact, and I think first and foremost, what you get with Munster, and this is, it's always been there for Munster, and it's always going to be there in a team with Peter Omani in it, but certainly Graham Rowntree has a belligerent team, aren't they?
There is a weird sense of pride when you watch Munster. Now, I really desperately wanted him to... I've never liked Munster. Never liked Munster in my life. I just couldn't help admiring them, the way that they play. Who's the hooker? He had a
Baron.
Baron had a great game.
The seven, Hodnett had an ace
game.
He
was great.
Yeah. I like the wing and Nash. Is it Nash or Nash?
Nash, I think.
I was watching without
sound, but Nash. Let's say Nash.
If you just watch this one game in isolation, and I haven't watched.
You think you'd
all
be watching the URC champions?
No, well, yeah. Yeah. What I was going to say was then just based purely on that 80 minutes and being real knee jerk, Jack Crowley is the best fly half. other than Johnny Sexton.
He's bloody good, isn't he?
He was outstanding.
But I don't think he's played much fly half. I don't know. But
By the way, when did Mike Haley become like a crash ball eight? I don't know when that happened. But he was smashing into contact. But I've seen Mike Haley play a lot, and I don't remember him doing that ever.
Well, it's Graham Rowntree getting the best out of the boys.
Yeah,
friend of the pod, Graham Rowntree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hell of a win, that, to go over to South Africa.
It's an awesome win.
Keith Earls' last title was 12 years ago.
Was it really?
And he's just won another one.
Fair play.
Crikey. So yeah. He won his title 1 year after he played for the Lions.
Good quick maths.
Yeah. Nice. The other thing I'd say as well is...
Maybe 2 years.
The Lions...
12.
Oh, yeah, because the Lions were a year late. Were they?
No.
But the Lions on time?
12 years ago would be 2011. The yeah. Lions would have been 2009.
Oh, they on.
Do you think all those? Do you think all those Stormers?
Close, quick maths.
Do you think all those Stormers fans and players were regretting? Because we said it last week. You want to be careful if Peter Armani sees that video of them all celebrating that Munster beat Wednesday.
Easiest to talk. Fair play. So Munster, when they had to go away to Glasgow,
mm-hmm.
they had to go away to Leinster,
yeah,
and they've then not so, a fast turnaround to get to Cape Town.
That's a great point.
It's really
that
really
is remarkable.
Really impressive.
You've got a Munster shirt just right above your head, Phil.
Yeah. The Quinlan.
It was the shirt that guy was wearing when he ran on to take that photo, wasn't it?
Yeah, first time I've ever really supported or wanted Munster to win anything. I didn't even want. I turned on the TV as a solid Stormers fan. Stormers, yeah, Stormers.
You were like the Russian crowd in Rocky IV.
Yeah,
by the end, exactly what I was like.
Come on, Storms, let's give them an absolute beating. And the more I watched them, I thought, God, this is a good team. I have mentioned this before, and I got roundly criticised for it. But I was watching Malherbe and Kitson play, and like, obviously they're an incredible set of names. They didn't do much. I mean, I said this about Malherbe before. I thought he looked overweight. I thought he looked sluggish around the park. And everyone said, no, JB, you need to watch more of him. I've seen him in a couple of games now, and I really watched him this game. And they just didn't really do any damage to a Munster scrum, which, let's be honest, they're not full of big names. It's not the Irish front row that they're up against.
No.
Well, you say that, and I think last week's Champions Cup final, if I were Franz Malherbe, watching that, I couldn't wait to play against Andrew Porter. So, yeah. Was it Dave Kilcoyne?
Archer was the tight end. Baron was the hooker, and Loughman.
Loughman.
So, that isn't the Irish front row as we know.
No.
Maybe they should give it a shot.
Maybe they should think about. Yeah, because Porter's amazing at what he does, but he looked like he could be a potential weak link.
I'll tell you the player that I was disappointed with. So I was talking, when the game started, some of the guys around me, I was saying, watch the 10, watch the Stormers 10, Libok. He is class. However many minutes in, he gets the intercept, brilliant, I told you. And then I don't think he had his best game.
No.
There's quite a few errors.
Well, I wonder if Stormers or that classic team, which have got so much talent, because they do have a lot of talent, that they're just not that focused on game plan and coaching, and they just think, well, if we have the ball, we'll eventually score.
No, but Hodner, Omani, Coombs, just all over them.
Yeah, I mean, that's one element of the game. I mean, I thought a really important element of this game was there was a defensive stand by Munster, so Munster are all over Stormers. They've sort of kept them out. Scores are something like 7-5 or something like that, right in the first half. And Stormers get the ball. And I'm thinking, right, if Stormers score here, they've weathered all of the Munster attack and now they're going to score and this is going to be devastating. Munster really stood up to that. So there is that element, you know, like you were saying, with those boys who are just absolute dogs. But I think it's the other side of the ball, on the attacking side, where they showed exactly how good and how well coached they are. I didn't see any of that from Stormers. I tell you, the other guy who they're going to miss him. I mean, they're not going to miss him because they don't like him that much. I'm sure the fans don't like him that much, but I love him, is Fekitoa. Obviously, he's off to Benetton next year, but he was putting in some shots. I mean, he nearly killed Dion Ferry. That's what rugby's all about. Like, that is what rugby's about. He nearly killed a man in front of us. He's just such a hard physical specimen. And, you know, this is a guy who never used to be a hard physical specimen. I mean, he might have been, but he could run.
I think he probably always was. It's just we probably saw more of the flashy stuff that he did earlier in his career.
Mm. I mean, you know, get rid of the flashy stuff. No one wants to see it. All we want to see is him absolutely leathering blokes.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
On YouTube, which has had more views in the last 24 hours, the Premiership final or the URC final?
URC by a million times a million.
On the official channels?
So, the top two, so Premiership and BT Sport versus URC and Via Sports.
I've got to say it's URC because of South African interest.
Via Play Sports.
Yeah, I would have. My gut feeling would be because actually South Africa's number one sport is rugby.
And actually, Mensah must have a huge footprint of fans.
Geographic, yeah. They have an enormous.
Yeah,
there was some Munster men in the Glasgow pub.
Of course, there was. That makes sense.
But I'm going to go for the South African audience. It'll be the URC final.
So Premiership is,
and also misery loves company. Like I've noticed this from doing YouTube a little bit. You get way more views and interest when, say, for example, when England got pumped by France.
Yeah.
Way more interest than when England cruised to a win.
Yeah. So Premiership across those two is 86,000.
I think the URC have got 200,000 plus.
They're 146,000. So they're 60,000 as it currently stands.
Small numbers on both.
Yeah, neither of them are enormous, are they?
No.
But yeah, currently URC. But then URC is the population of the markets that it operates in are considerably bigger.
Well, I think for URC, having a South Africa Ireland final is probably the best outcome for their viewership.
But yeah,
I bet the best measure of it, and this is what we've got, you know, FA Cup final, Champions League final coming up. The measure of a sport, as you say, is the fact that lots of fans of not the two clubs will watch those events.
Someone will ask me between now and the Champions League final, do you want to watch Champions League final?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yes.
They won't care about who the teams are. They'll say, do you want to watch Champions League final?
Yeah. It would be the same whoever the teams were. Yeah. Whereas rugby, as I think it's a really good observation. I don't think rugby's there right now. Well, it has been in the past. And for total rugby nauseas like us, it is.
Yeah.
Well, in a rugby city, Glasgow, it is a football city, but they have a professional rugby team.
Yeah.
Two of 20 televisions in Walkabout were showing the rugby. And maybe
even the URC rugby that Glasgow were a part of that competition, right?
Only two,
we're
showing it because the bigger draw during the Premiership was the German league football, and the biggest draw after it was the Championship playoff, Luton versus Coventry.
Yeah, I mean, rugby. So, just going back to the Premiership, like, how do we solve rugby's problems? And the answer is, well, first of all, we fire everybody. I mean, that's the first thing, including the current guys. I mean, I recommend reading Stephen Jones's thing today because he does summarise this well. And one of the things he does say in this is, like, the current Premiership hierarchy do have some brains between them because a lot of people have left and there's not a lot of new people in. So, you know, maybe wait, but they're still from the same cohort of individuals. Well, you know what I mean?
I kind of don't put it down to individuals as much as the system in which those individuals operate. I think if you or I, I mean, some people would argue that would just make it worse, obviously, but we obviously think we have some ideas that could shake
it
up.
They're not even hard ideas, are they?
No, they're not. Some of them are very simple. However, the system within which Premiership rugby certainly operates, and rugby generally, actually, are not conducive to any individual good idea actually making it to the surface, but because there are this group over here have a say, like, this group over here have a say. It's a real horizontal leadership structure, and nothing gets done.
I'm not even talking about, like, systemic change. I'm not talking about rearranging the calendar or moving games or anything like that. We'll come to that stuff in a second. I just mean, where does rugby fit in sporting landscape? And I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. It is unique because of the unique qualities it has, even within sport, of confrontation, physicality, strength, yada yada yada. And we're talking about colourblind fans. Jesus Christ!
And
boys.
I tell you, what,
that's not coming from the club.
I'm seeing this more and more, and I've got a teenage son and daughter, but I am seeing a hunger for some traditional values.
Risk.
And young lads, I'm telling you, Louis and his mates, they're getting a buzz off of traditional things. Like they're all going to the gym.
Yep.
And this is teenage boys generally, and it may well be the Instagram thing, perhaps. I know, but they're going to the gym. Yes, they're more tactile and more emotionally attuned than we were in previous generations and stuff, and they're more into the other things they're into, but there's a gap there, and yeah, a gap which rugby would fill. And I think there's a lot of parents, for all the stuff that rugby does to try and not scare some people away, it will attract so many more people if it plays to honour, stoicism, strength, physicality,
discipline
yeah, all of those
teamwork
values.
Teamwork. So like, I think teamwork's the only thing they're allowed to talk about now. But another thing Stephen Jones said in his article was, rugby, and this is something which rugby authorities say as well, and it makes me want to just rage. Because of the competition of other things people can do on a weekend, they might not play rugby. To which I reply, well, stop trying to make rugby into something similar to everything else that they can do on a weekend. Make it stand out alone. And I mean, what else has those things? Well, is it shopping in Zara? Well, is it going bowling? I mean,
it's principles of being a salesperson. If you were trying to sell rugby,
yeah,
which is ultimately what we have to do, if you were trying to sell, you have to either create urgency, some scarcity, or we've only got so many spots, but that's not going to work because the numbers are down. But so you've got to solve a problem. That's how you sell rugby. You've got to find the problem that rugby can be the solution for. And I would say, if you've got lads that are, if you've got, and I'm saying lads, obviously, I totally invite women and girls to play rugby. But let me just say lads for a second. If you sold rugby on like this, and you said, do you have a son who you get a bit concerned that they're spending loads of time on their computer, and you just want them to get outside? Do you also want them to socialise, not only online through Discord and stuff, but you want them to actually get out there and chat to lads? And do you want a nice place that you can go and meet some other parents from the local area and have a coffee with? Go to your local rugby club.
Yeah, simple.
So easy, right?
Yeah, just a bit of discipline, just all those things. Yeah, it's crazy. It's maddening to watch these people who don't know what they're doing control our sport. Maddening. Enough of that.
Did either of you see any of the Barbarians?
Yeah, I saw a bit.
I no longer watch performative fake rugby.
It's like watching Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, it was not interesting.
It was pretty cool to see that just the back line of the World 15 might be one of the great, like 11 to 15.
I don't even know who played.
It was, let me think of the names. It was Semi Randrandra was 12.
Overrated.
Hold on, I'll get it.
A classic barbarian. If
ever. Lau Mappi and
Lau Mappi at 12.
Why is he a barbarian? Like, what skills does he have to be a barbarian?
This is the world.
Sorry, yeah, he shouldn't be in performative rugby. Like, that's a beast that you cage up until you need it.
What have you got? The back line there. Hold on.
Yeah. Lau Mappi and Randrandra is the world with Nkosi, Folau and Sir Charles.
Folau. Yeah. Israel Folau.
Yeah. Israel Folau.
Why did I not watch this?
He was awesome.
I'd have watched this if I'd have known.
He was awesome.
Scored a try.
I've got my Israel Folau jersey on.
He is awesome. So,
where is...
Nkosi, 11 to 15, Nkosi, Lau Mappi, Randrandra, Folau, Piatau.
Wow.
Just awesome.
Okay, I'm so in now. Sorry. Take it all back. This sounds like
unfortunately,
a great game.
It was a really good game. There were some amazing players. Front page of BBC Rugby Union.
Here we go. Guess. Here we go. Is it something to do with the Premier 15s?
No, it's connected to this game.
Homophobic rugby player straps on, I don't know, boots.
Folau booed as Jones's Barbarian beat World 15.
Well, not universally, because he's been widely celebrated here.
Well, he's an amazing rugby player.
That's one of the best rugby players ever to set foot on a field.
Yeah, and that's all I would say about him today.
Well, that's all we need to say, because do you know what? We only look at him as a rugby player. If you want moral guidance, don't go to your rugby players. It's not a great idea.
It's really not a great idea.
It's not a great idea. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, is that what the BBC led off with? Scumbags.
That's the first story.
Absolute scumbags.
The first two words on the top story in Rugby Union after this weekend, Falau booed.
So how many people went to watch that game? Like 40,000 maybe? 30,000?
Yeah, about that.
So they just need to find a couple of people that booed. I mean, how about the people that cheered? Why don't they say Falau cheered on his return to Twickenham? Who wrote that?
It happened. He was.
Yeah,
booed.
But he was also cheered.
Yes.
I mean, if I was that, I would cheer him. Some fans' indifference to Falau. Why didn't they write that?
Yeah, the fact that that's the lead story and the thread of the content of the story of a rugby
game. How about Radranda? Was he booed or was he cheered? Does the BBC
pay? I imagine he was cheered for his beard.
Yeah. Why don't they leave it at that? Radranda cheered, but some fans didn't like him. Radranda considered slightly overpaid by other fans. Like, it's just such a terrible story by awful journalists. They don't even deserve to be called journalists, quite frankly.
Yeah.
What did we learn from that?
Are you going to the Rugby Writers dinner?
It was last Thursday.
Was it?
I've got some pictures from the Rugby Writers dinner from some friends of mine, and let me assure you, it's not something I would like to have attended.
I've had a good time there in the past. I wasn't invited, but there you go.
I was invited.
You think I might be? We're working on the host broadcaster for the Premiership. And
well, I was invited on to three different tables, mate. So, well, you know, I'm a man of influence. And I would have liked to have gone, actually. If I would have made it work with my diary, I might have gone.
Nah.
Getting some savage arguments.
No, that's...
It would be a lot easier to burn every bridge from...
Yeah, in person.
In person.
It'd be so much easier.
Yeah. If that is your objective, please go to that and do it there, not using this podcast as a vehicle. That'd be great. Or our combined Twitter account.
Yeah.
Trying to be positive. It was a great game. It was some really good tries. But like you say, it's not the sort of game where you're going to go, that person, like Adam Radwan scored a try, but you're not going, oh, wow, look, he's got being.
Adam Radwan's been let go by Newcastle, hasn't he? He's not leaving. Have I made that up?
I don't think so, no.
I thought it was on a list of players that have left.
No.
There was a big list of players that I saw, but I didn't think he was on there.
He wasn't on it. It was Sean Robinson, Carl Ferns.
Mm-hmm. Mickey Young.
Mickey Young and a bunch of other less... high-profile players. But, okay, let's talk about London Irish. What do you understand then? What do you know?
It's over. It's simply over. The American buyers are not coming forward with
anything.
Because
there's still talk from some quarters saying, oh, no, it's going to happen. It's happening still. It's just an issue.
Well, what could be the issue possibly be? You've got the money, you've not got the money. Like, I can't see what the issue would be. So, in my mind, it's over. And for once, I think the RFU are making the right decision, saying, look, you haven't got the funds in place. It's over. You need to show us the funds. Now, they've been rattled, haven't they, because of the debacle by Worcester and...
Wasps.
I'm looking at this from a different angle now. And call me cynical, but so be it. If I was going to cheat the salary cap, this is the year to do it. You do it now. The reason you do it now is because the Premiership are desperate. They're down to the last 10 teams. Going to 9 teams would be the death knell in the league. If you're going to get the other owners to sweep something under the carpet,
well they'd fine you loads. But there is no relegation. So,
well, I just say, look, you fine us, we're leaving. Like, so if you don't want the salary cap, right? It's kind of, do you know when you've got a minority government and a couple of rebels can, not minority, a slim majority, mm-hmm. and a couple of rebels can derail everything. Right now, any club that wants to do anything they want within the laws can do it, because each of the clubs is so powerful, because this league is absolutely on the brink. They can't go below 10 teams. Imagine going below 10 teams. They can't kick anyone out, because Wasps don't really exist now, so it's not like they can just bring Wasps back. Worcester don't exist, so what would they do, say, to a team which roundly hates the Premiership because they've been disrespected by them every time in Ealing? Do you want to come to Premiership?
Do you know, if I were the chairman of or owner of Jersey, I might just roll the dice on a legal case, because we've seen it before, haven't we, that when anyone's tested the restriction of trade, when anyone's actually tested that in a court, it has not gone well for the Premiership.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a legal mind. I mean,
it's a bit late now. Anyway.
Although I have got a recent win over a barrister, which does massively fill my heart with joy. If I was Jersey,
I'm not saying they should or will, but no. I'm just actually going. I guess the point is they probably should feel more aggrieved than anyone.
So if I was Jersey, I would just hang fire.
Yeah,
so do what you're doing because you're doing it great, and stay in the Championship because you don't have this awful CVC deal. I've said it before. Other teams are going to end up folding, and
do you think so? So right, okay, that's what I want to summarise. So you think Irish are done? I'm hoping for an 11th hour rescue. I'm really fearful that you're correct.
Yeah.
But I hope I'm wrong. But what other clubs, just as we look across the Newcastle. Premiership?
The Newcastle are at least cutting their cloth to suit. So they will, they might even, if they do it right, they might even be profitable in the coming years because they are cutting. I'm looking at the list of released players. There's about 15 released players, including academy guys. So some of whom, like Mullipola or Carl Ferns, will be some of their best paid players.
Yep, Munipola particularly.
And then Exeter, we've heard, are a bit wobbly.
Yep.
Bristol are fine, because as long as Steve Lansdowne is there. Bath are fine, no worries. Northampton seem okay and actually a really well-run club. Leicester would sell if there was a buyer, so there's obviously a shortfall there, despite the big stand and the big crowd, which is the most, that's the one that concerns me the most.
Yep.
Yeah.
The fact that Leicester are struggling. Sale... Simon Orange just came out and was very honest about the sums that they've had to sink. Him and Jed Mason have had to sink into the club.
When did he say this?
Last week in an article.
What did he say?
He basically said an owner of a premiership needs to be willing to sink £300 million in. I think he's talking over the lifespan of it.
He's not wrong.
But it's when he broke down the numbers, it's million. Oh, was he talking about the league in? He's talking about the overall league.
Is that the overall league? I was going to say, because Sale, most of the clubs lose £1 million to £2 million a year.
Yeah. Like, your net worth, this is from what I've heard from some owners, needs to be around £100 million to afford the club.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
You've got to not mind losing a couple of £1 million a year.
But you'll get addicted.
You've got to like it enough to not mind losing a couple of £1 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where they're at. So. Let's just think this through. So, will London Irish hang about? The answer is no, because they don't. One of the most remarkable things about this whole thing is watching a professional sports team sports league wants to shrink. I mean, this is where we are. When the answer to your problem is one of the worst answers possible, which is shrinking your product. I mean, I've said this last week. It's a real indictment of where they are. So, okay.
If I was the URC, I'd be just waiting for Tuesday to go, come on.
You say the clubs have got the most leverage at the moment. URC, anyone who wants to...
London Irish makes so much sense. The massive diaspora of Irish, of Scots and Welsh and South African, Italian even, in London.
Yeah.
That'd be dynamite.
It could be good, couldn't it?
It's a great point, that. The amount of... Just in Munster fans who live in London, you could probably sell half the tickets... every week.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that is a stumbling block. Maybe the stumbling block for the American takeover is we want you out of the Premiership. We want the CVC deal gone, and then we'll take on the CVC deal that
they want an extra.
URC have got.
Yeah, but well,
because you could do that by letting them fail and then buying the IP, which is cheaper than buying the club itself.
The speculative journalism is there's what was that name? The Baltimore Ravens linebacker.
Baltimore Ravens? Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis. He's part of the consortium that purchased it. And part of the talk is that the reason they want London Irish is nothing to do with the rugby. They want Hazelwood because it will be the base for the Jacksonville Jaguars London franchise, potentially.
Well, I mean, that would be a very interesting high-performance centre, wouldn't it? Having two types of contact sport operating out there. I mean, that's a very, very interesting proposition.
Mm.
Very interesting proposition. I mean... I think we've seen it once before when Harlequins had a rugby league team coming out in the same facility.
Well, that place has been used when there's the London Wembley games. Hazelwood is regularly used by NFL teams.
Mm.
Yeah. So, Premiership goes down. Yeah, so the Premiership doesn't want 11 teams. So they're not willing to budge at all to help London Irish. Neither are the RFU. And people should remember this when London Irish go. It's not planned, I don't think, but they're just waiting for the first one to fail. Then you're left with the Premiership. And you think, well, okay, so how do the teams negotiate this? Because in the 24-25 season, they've got an extra God knows how much of expenditure. So the only good thing about the Premiership, other than referees, is the competitiveness of the league. Well, next year, we've not really got 10 teams. We've got 9 teams plus Newcastle. Mm-hmm. So Newcastle is going to be a bit of a dead rubber fixture. Year after that, who's going to spend up to the salary cap? Because we might then have a 10-team league with the rugby equivalent of, well, not the rugby equivalent, the Premiership equivalent of the Dragons at the bottom. But we might have 3 or 4 Dragons teams.
But and conversely, you'll have Bristol spending $6.5 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or I think it's basically, with all the dispensations and everything that comes into it and all the credits and stuff, it's basically $8.5 million.
So you've actually undone all the good work that you previously had with the salary cap. So you're going to have a load of dead rubber games. You're going to have less games, which are interesting to TV. Less fans showing up, because why do you show up to uncompetitive games? And at the end of the season, who cares what happens at the bottom of the table?
And no sign of a quota of English players. So, no. So it does its job for the national team. I know there are credits, but there's no hard you must have.
Well, I don't think we need to worry about that, because I can't imagine many people travelling. I mean, maybe the top teams who've got some cash. The upside of this, of course, is lots of players will be available for the Championship. So you're going to have these Championship sides which are going to be stronger than ever before, just because there's going to be more players. Mm. And that's quite exciting. And they don't have the restrictions that they've got. I mean, if the Championship could get their act together, they have got one hell of a... I mean, they might even be in a situation where they could become the top league, because if it's ring-fenced, they're not part of the...
No, pyramid. I don't think it is. I think that one of the issues for the Championship is that they have repeatedly, year after year after year after year, had their money cut to the point that the Premiership effectively operates like a cartel, where you would have to be Steve Lansdowne to get a team to the Premiership, have so much money that you can absorb the massive disparity in P-share funding, in parachute payments, and all of these benefits which the shareholders of the Premiership get. So what I was going to say is these Championship clubs are so desperate that, because they've just been... Their money's been cut. I understand what you're saying about growing something, but they're in a place where the second the Premiership opens the door and says, right, we're going to have two 10-team leagues, Premiership A, Premiership B, you're in, and then you're in our rules.
Well, here's
that they're going to say yes.
Yeah, well, here's what I would say. Say no, because you don't want what comes with the Premiership. And they're in this weird position where they think it's a bad thing that they can't get promoted. And I think it's a good thing. If they can't get promoted, they've got no pressure to spend that money. All of a sudden, the league becomes competitive. And before you know it, if they do it right, they could become sustainable in their own right. Because the worst thing in the world is to become dependent on the RFU, because they're completely incompetent and, for the most part, malicious. So, well,
there are good examples of that in the Championship. And I know they finished at the foot of the table, but Richmond are effectively a part-time...
Yep.
Semi-pro team. Well, not part-time, but yeah, they've all got jobs. And they're a semi-pro, part-time team, and they managed to mix it. Okay, they finished bottom, but they weren't adrift. They were in it till the last game of the season. And because for next season, I don't know whether they're going to stay up now. If London Irish, I don't know how it's going.
Well, Wasps are going to have their place, were they not?
Wasps are going to have their place. With Wasps not taking their place, I don't know what's going to happen now. Maybe they'll get a reprieve, but they've let their DOR go because they've...
Reprieve and they're
cutting their cloth. Yeah.
Oh, that's gonna be a nightmare. Because if they're planning for a tier 3 instead of tier 2 rugby,
yeah,
there's a big difference in what you would spend.
Yeah. Oh well, there's different rules, different laws too. Don't forget that.
Tier 3.
You have to go and play kids' rules.
Yeah.
Go and get an under-8s coach, because they'll probably be more adept to playing this game than the actual real rugby man that you had in charge.
Mm. I'm glad we led off. You were right to lead off on the.
The positive.
Talking about the positives of the games, because these finals last weekend, this weekend have been absolutely brilliant.
Great games.
Yeah, dying embers of a great sport, though, aren't they? Because these two teams will not be able to.
Well, I think the World Cup's going to be great as well. This is what I mean.
I think the World Cup.
This is what I mean.
Great.
The raw product, whatever's going on, whatever goes on off the pitch, when you actually just put on your TV and watch the rugby, forgetting about how it's produced, presented, all that, just watching the pure rugby, I think it's great.
Yeah, but the way I see it is, the World Cup might be sort of like the ballroom on the cruise ship, okay? And it looks great and everyone's dancing around. And what we see in England in the grassroots game and in the Premiership is basically water coming through into the boiler room, and we're saying this isn't going to last very long.
I was going to say in Titanic down in the boiler room, it all looked like they were having way more fun.
Yeah, exactly. Boys, this isn't going to end well. Don't worry, the ballroom looks great. No, we really sort out all these leaks here. No. People are dancing. It's absolutely fantastic. The World Cup will be great. It's going very, very badly.
Well, I'd say international rugby is going very well, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but
this is the massive feast or famine, isn't it?
Yeah, so international rugby is going to be dominated by France soon. Absolutely dominated by France. Who is going to be playing for England? How are they going to produce these players? Like, they are gutting. I mean, maybe they just do what they've always done and rely on the private schools. But if the private schools are so upset about contact rugby that they are the ones leading the change.
How have New Zealand, with a population of 3 million, done it for generations?
Great question.
Because I don't see it as simply as that, because ultimately it's 23 guys out on a pitch.
It is.
I understand how having the base of the pyramid massive means you can increase the height.
Not massive, but like high quality. So New Zealand, as I understand it, will still have players in 5 years' time, or maybe they won't in 5 years' time, they'll still have players that play a game which looks like rugby.
Like the Ireland team is based on having high quality, mainly coming through, yes, the academies, but the public school, the private school system. But, so I don't see the necessary correlation between. I think English rugby could be amazing with just private school products. I don't want that to be the case, but we'll still have a very good team.
I mean, if the private schools in England are the ones allegedly, according to our RFU councillors, are allegedly the ones clamouring for the change to the tackle heights and a reduction in risk, that doesn't strike me as a particularly good place to get your hardened rugby players from. In fact, it strikes me as a terrible place to get your hardened rugby players from. So, I mean, you know, you can still get your good athletes, you still get people who are well-trained in skills, but how are they going to produce these lads if they can't play the adult game? You won't know if they're any good to play the pro game until they actually get...
It's not so different, Jay.
I don't think it's as different as you're making out.
It is so different.
I really don't.
I'm looking forward to the first game for Tok H and seeing exactly what Tok H do and how they look and how that game is refereed. Because as I understand it, it has to be... It's called the belly tackle for a reason. And I'm telling you, it's a different kettle of fish.
I just don't see it as being that different.
Certainly not in terms of producing a young player. Yeah. And as I've already said, if it was trialled in the right way and you got hard evidence that this was necessary rather than this blanket thing when the data I perceive to be quite weak at this point.
It's rubbish.
Yeah, no. As we've talked about before, but what I'm saying is so long as those elements were ticked, and to a small degree, as long as it doesn't make things worse, I'm actually okay, as I've said before, I'm okay with children.
Yeah, okay.
So, my point would be the bit that I'm most worried about is the way it's been rolled out. Like the directive to referees and the way the law is implemented. I don't see the fact that you've got to tackle now. What's the difference there? 6 inches, 8 inches lower.
Huge difference. It's not for you because of the way
it doesn't. Yeah, because it would be zero difference for me because I never tackle upright. Yeah. I don't think it is as that the actual intent is damaging.
How many times have you been injured?
Loads.
Exactly. Tackle upright.
Very, very rarely from me making a tackle.
Well, still. Correlation.
It's the way that the guidance that they've given the referees, which is non-existent, so you're going to get all these different interpretations from teams and referees. I don't think it's as destructive as some people. I'm interested to see. I wouldn't have voted for it, but it's going to be a total farce because of how badly it's been handled.
Having the inside track on this somewhat and talking very widely about it, one of the most disturbing things about this whole process is how much the rumours were true. So the rumours were it's going to be the belly. I heard the guy from the RFU describe it as the belly tackle, and then immediately in that same meeting go, oh, we've not called it the belly tackle, we've not decided it's a belly tackle. And then, hey presto, after the consultation, what was it? It was the worst version of what we thought, and it exactly lined up to the original press release.
I agree, but
so this is just the start of it, because the other rumours going around is like, okay, we are going to reduce it to only one person in the tackle. And the other one is the ball player can't make any sudden movements into contact. And you add up all these things and you think, these are not just rumours. These are things that they are considering, but they are actively lying. They are actively lying. And we've seen it with the high tackle stuff. It is always the worst interpretation of what they said. So this is only the start. It's not the end of it. Not by a long way.
Well, it could get rolled out across rugby at the elite level.
Well, if it does, that's a different matter. But I can't imagine it, because who would watch that? Do you watch that?
I think... I don't think it's going to change it that much. Like, I really don't.
What? You don't think it'd change it? What, like... One man in the tackle? No,
so that's not in these rules. I would be very strongly against only one man in the tackle. I'm also strongly against, as we said before, I've got the laws in front of me right now.
Significant drop in height.
Yeah, 9.11.B. Ball carriers must not lower their height significantly before making contact with an opponent in open play.
Kill me.
I think that is. That is dreadful.
That is absolutely dreadful.
You know,
it is really dreadful. You know, when the ref gets you in a little huddle before games, back in the day, and there's certain questions, when the ref says any questions, there's certain questions that people would always ask. Remember, there's always someone that says, when's the ball out, sir?
Yeah.
Is it like hands on or off the ground?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is such a good law change.
Yeah.
It's daylight, not hands on. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Such a sensible law change.
Yeah, great. But it always used to be the question you asked. Now the question that teams are going to ask... is, sir, what does significant mean to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, done that one to death.
Yeah, we have. I guess this, the summary of what the point I was kind of making is, and I don't see even this law change affecting this unduly, but is international rugby has arguably never been better. The RFU's in a really bad place financially, but this World Cup could be...
Let me just
incredible.
Take myself
There's legitimately half a dozen teams that could win the World Cup, maybe more.
I just need to take myself out of insider sort of inside baseball mode, because that's primarily where I live. Taking myself away from that, you are right, because it has never been more competitive. There are a lot of teams that can win. And that is positive. I don't think there's any two ways about it. So yeah, I think this could be a great World Cup. But I'm just so negative on the future, because I think the English game is about to collapse. And once that goes, everything goes.
But you should be viewing that as a good thing.
The issue is
that 27 years ago, whatever it was when professionalism began, that was the point at which how do we do this? And the way they arranged it was with lots of different people having a stake and a say. And because you can't untie those knots... This outcome that we're now facing was always destined to happen at some point, because nobody had control enough to change the direction. It was a giant tanker, which there were four different people holding the steering wheel, and you couldn't. And there's an iceberg ahead. So what it actually needs is almost break it, so you can start again.
I'm focused on 5 years' time. I'm not really worried about rugby at the moment, because I think it's dead. How do we replace it, and what do we replace
it
with?
English domestic elite domestic rugby.
And grassroots, the whole lot. English. Because it's going to break.
It is not a growing sport.
No, it's not.
It is
and
a
the people
sport.
Responsible for it.
It was a minority sport before, and it's... Yeah.
We had an incredible minority sport, in the same way the UFC is an incredible minority sport. And they want to mainstream it. And the more you mainstream it, the more it loses its appeal to anybody. Because believe you me, you're not competing with anything, really. You're just not competing with anything. It's not good enough. Sorry to bang on about the colourblind people. But, you know, that was the main thrust of the sales pitch for the Premiership Final.
Well, as we said last week...
But do you not think that would be one of the most interesting facts? If you found out behind the scenes that that's why the Premiership did it, but they made no play of it whatsoever... So yeah, this is for colourblind people, but yeah, we just do this anyway. But the fact that was like their sales pitch. This is what we're doing. This is why you should come to Twickenham, because you might be colourblind. What on earth are you doing? Get out of my office. You're fired. That would be my immediate response to that.
Yeah, I don't mind the decision, and I don't mind the justification.
Yeah, yeah. Don't mind it, but keep it quiet.
It didn't need to be a PR story.
It's not why we're watching the game, is it? It's not why we're watching the game. Idiots. Oh. And enough of that.
Yeah.
So I spent all day yesterday at a rugby club.
Which one?
It was awesome. It's a rugby club I've never been to. I was phenomenally impressed by it.
Mm.
And it's in St. Helens.
In St. Helens that you've never been to?
I've never been to this rugby club.
Was it Knowsley Road?
No, it was not Knowsley Road.
Is that, Is it Rugby League Club?
It is.
Ah.
Now, I don't know if you could call it this. I don't know if it's certainly, it looks like it's spelled this way. Maybe Google it and see if you can say it. Theato Amateur Rugby League Club.
Theato.
Theato, I think you say it. T-H, I don't know, E-T-T-O. It's something like that. It is brilliant. So, do you know why I was there? I mean, you do, but, you know...
Does that have something to do with shifting some tin in a CrossFit comp?
Yes, that's right. I was doing a CrossFit competition, and it happened to be held in
Thato Heath.
Thato Heath, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Happens to be held at Thato Heath Rugby League Ground. And you get there, and like...
Was it outside?
No. They've got their own training barn with a artificial pitch inside a training barn.
Oh, I like
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's where the competition was. So, I did the obligatory thing when I'm at a rugby club, had a little nose around, and I went upstairs, and a delightful lady introduced herself to me and started telling me all about the club. It is the biggest amateur rugby league club in the country. It has 22 teams playing there.
Wow.
The pitch is absolutely immaculate, and that's the first thing I noticed. It was like, when I went over to Lim a few years ago and they had their pitches done, their pitches looked so good, I'd happily go on holiday there.
And it's always sunny in Lim as well.
It's always sunny when I play there, yeah.
It's always looks beautiful.
Such a beautiful club.
Yeah.
So, the pitches were immaculate. And then about, I would say, a couple of hundred people showed up to watch. And they were playing a team out of Rochdale. And the nice thing was, you go into their clubhouse and it is a big facility. Like, it's not... some sort of... I've got this thing in my mind that every rugby league club is like a couple of porter cabins or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is not that. This is definitely not that. But you go in there and they've got this massive cabinet and they must have won so many things. Trophies, medals everywhere. It's just a cool facility. So, yeah, there is quite a lot of rugby which I don't know about.
How did you get on in your comp? That's the most important thing.
I don't want you to mistake this for anything other than the fact I have just been busting.
Go.
Fortunately, JB gave me a blow-by-blow, so I will not miss anything from him telling you.
I will try and get... So, the answer is... the answer is, not very well. We finished as a pair 11th out of 19.
Okay, middle of the table.
I had the second biggest lift in the in our competition.
Nice.
130 kilogram clean. I should have got 135, but I slipped.
That is nice.
It's getting there, isn't it?
That is very good.
I think I've got 140 in me. I really do.
Definitely.
Definitely.
With your rate of progress recently as well.
100%. Yes. but what I'd say, it's details. So on our first workout, we went as fast as we possibly could. And I literally don't think any man alive could have moved as fast as we did. And we were a minute behind the top ranked pair.
Wow.
But luckily I'd filmed it. So after that, I was so gutted. I was like, we don't deserve to be here. Let's just go home. This is a waste of time. And watched a video. And we were smashing everyone in our heat by like 6 or 7 reps. And then right at the end, we get a changeover wrong. And we have a bit of a miscommunication on our buyout for war walks. This means nothing to some people. And that has cost us 30, 40 seconds, and we lose seven places. And then the next workout, we have a couple of no reps, which cost us an absolute fortune, and that drops us 5 places. If we'd gone into the lifting, lifted us from 14th to 7th.
Yeah.
So we're now in striking range of the finals. You need to be top 4.
Yeah.
And then, well, the last event. I'll tell you off air about the last event. But some of the judging was not quite to standard. That said, judges do it for free. You know, we weren't going to win it anyway, so, you know, they can all rest easy.
Yeah. You can't complain. It's like complaining about the referee, but you've been beaten by 30 points.
Exactly. It was an awesome day, though. Northern Games, it was. I can't wait to do the next one.
Very good.
Cannot wait.
That sounds awesome.
It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I've not had that much fun. Considering, like, you're absolutely broken by workout 3, and then you might need to do a final. But I've not had that much fun in the afternoon for a long, long time.
Excellent.
So I get
time that incredibly
perfectly. Yeah. Perfect.
No, I'm sure you. I will listen back, but I'm sure you just.
I'm sure you will.
Sure. No. Sure. Just explain what we said in the kitchen. Sounded really good.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go on.
I was going to say. Well, I've not confirmed our CrossFit challenge yet, but the CrossFit challenge should be us versus a Premiership rugby player of some repute, and we should do him versus me doing Olympic lifts, him versus Tim at a row. And then him versus Phil at some like handstand push-ups and pull-ups. and then see if he can beat any one of us at any of these things.
Or smash all of us.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced.
I think, depending on what position the Premiership rower play, the Premiership
seven.
Player...
International the, seven.
An international seven will cane me at a row.
Do you reckon?
Well, yeah, because they will be presumably in their 20s or early 30s. They've got at least 10 years on me, maybe 15 years on me, or more.
Yeah, but you've got that technique... Tim, I mean, rowing is technically, mind you, I saw a couple of guys rowing.
A 21-year-old me, after I rowed at the Henley Regatta with Exeter University, I would have caned any Premiership player.
Yeah, but if you
now, 20 years further on.
if you don't know how to row, it does make a big difference.
Mm.
It makes a huge difference.
I think they'll have had a few tips.
Yeah.
Well, they're not our tips. Why are they our tips? I was watching a guy who's doing 1 minute 15 splits on his 500-metre row.
Nice.
That's quite quick, isn't it?
Getting 115 for one pull is pretty.
Yeah,
is pretty good.
Yeah. He did decrease after that. It was right at the start of the start of a 300-meter sprint.
Oh, okay, so it's 300 meters at that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he didn't complete it. That he finished about 125 or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Very fast. I've never even seen that number on my screen. Yeah, and I'm sure you can do a Premiership seven at Hanslam push-ups and pull-ups.
Pull-ups.
Pull-ups, well, it depends. I'm not bad at pull-ups.
There's no way that they're practicing handstand push-ups. Just the idea of doing a handstand push-up.
But they're just so immensely strong.
They are, but they're immensely heavy as well.
That's the thing, in my favour, I'm not that heavy.
Yeah, I think Phil's got them.
I don't think so.
Powerlifting, I'm screwed. But Olympic lifting, I bet they can't snatch.
Yeah, it's probably too high a injury risk for them to do snatch.
And if you injure this guy, oh my word. imagine being on the hook to pay the compensation for that for a year.
Oh, God.
It's like when World Rugby were paying Sale to pay Lou Diaga for a year.
Any more for any more?
No, I don't think so. And other than a bit of Super Rugby, there's not really any games next
no.
week.
No.
Not any games for a while, so we've got...
We'll keep podding, we'll find things to talk about.
We definitely will. The next round of games...
We'll have London Irish to dissect in more detail.
Yes, that's a good point.
One way or another, something's going to happen.
And we'll. It's only, a month or so, and then the World Cup warm-ups begin.
Yeah, so I'm
Steve Borthwick will announce it. Oh, that's one thing. Steve Borthwick will announce his 55-man squad, you'd think, probably tomorrow or... In the next couple of days, every other team has done it. Steve Borthwick has waited. Is it which players do you want to see in that wider squad that we haven't already seen in an England squad?
Joe Carpenter.
Theo Dan is one. Joe Carpenter is a good one.
I kind of think...
Oh, Varro Pavaruskin has been in training. But yeah, him.
Seb Atkinson.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
I think he's not a bad shout.
I think he'll be in. I don't think he'll make an England squad right now, but he's had a brilliant season. So yeah, good shout.
Charlie Atkinson has not done enough for me.
He's been in England squads before anyway, hasn't he?
Yeah
but is it like
point.
The apprentice kind of guy?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. This would be a 55-man squad.
I think Dan Kelly did one day.
Yeah.
And Dan Kelly's great.
Tom Willis did just a couple of days, and I think
Tom Willis.
I'd like to see him in.
Because of exceptional circumstances.
Yeah. I can't think of anyone else right now off the top of my head.
Yeah,
partly because Eddie Jones got in a lot of people across his tenure, hundreds of people into the wider squad with apprentice players as well.
But we can get into the conversation about World Cup bolters, we've got all that to explore. But are you up to speed and watching Succession?
No.
Oh, have we had this conversation before?
I've never seen it.
Please watch Succession. Phil, particularly, as I know you appreciate, Peep Show is my favourite show of all time.
I love Peep Show.
And it's the same guy, Jesse Armstrong, who wrote Peep Show, wrote Succession.
Okay.
He's come a long way.
Wow.
What? Hang on. The guy who wrote Peep Show wrote Succession?
The guy who wrote Peep Show wrote Succession.
I'm not even funny, that's a lot of range,
and
isn't it?
Will Ferrell is one of the executive producers, so just to put it that's the league that Jesse Armstrong is in now.
I think Peep Show is brilliantly
written. It is brilliant, isn't it?
It's brilliant, the whole thing is brilliant. There are so many moments where they do some weird thing in the show, and I'm like, yeah, I do that. It captures... uniqueness.
It's the quality of the characters and the consistency of the characters.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a mate of mine the other day, and he said the most amazing thing about Peep Show is that, and you don't get this with any other show, from the start of episode one, series one, to the end of series nine, when it finished, there is no growth in the characters whatsoever. They are just as useless at the end as they were at the beginning. And it's so true.
Oh, it is brilliant.
It's such a good show.
Yes.
And but yeah, so Jesse Armstrong wrote, and all the things you say about Peep Show, like the funny one-liners, the really great observations, it's,
yeah,
he does it, but with these awful billionaires and business. It's amazing.
So I've seen season one of Succession. I was like, yeah, this is interesting. I'm just so jaded by box sets.
It's really funny. You've just got to go back and watch it again. You've got to.
Mm.
It's so good. And the finale is tomorrow. The final episode is tomorrow. So that's why I mentioned it.
Will we get any insight? I mean, how closely does it map onto the Murdoch story, do you think?
I couldn't possibly say. As an employee
of the
Murdoch Empire,
I don't
recognise the relationship between the Roys and the Murdochs at all. I don't think there's any.
I never meant to put you in that position, Tim. I apologise profusely.
It has been said, though. But yeah.
Yeah, just not by you, though.
Well, if there is...
One last thing.
If there is, in the Murdoch organisation, if somewhere at News UK, when I go there to work for Virgin or TalkSport or whatever, if there is someone that is like Greg and Tom in Succession, and then I want to meet them and make them my friends.
Yes, quite. So, before we go, there is one more thing. It's a new phrase that I'll be using quite often. Unwise, but not illegal. So I am never going to stop using this phrase. As soon as I heard it, I thought, that is brilliant. Everything I do from now on is going to be unwise, but not illegal.
The scope defence.
Like scope defence.
That's what the new rugby defensive coaches should be doing. We've got the SCOF system now. It's unwise, but not illegal.
Well, look, sir, I know it was unwise, but was it illegal? Yeah.
Anyway, on that
point. In fact, do you know what? I'm going to set my Instagram profile right now as unwise, but not illegal. It perfectly encapsulates my life.
There we go. On that bombshell, thank you very much for listening. Patreon.com/eggchasers. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will keep podcasting. The rest of the grassroots pod, all the grassroots podcasts will shut up. They'll probably shut up shop for a month, won't they?
Funnily enough, the thing that Stephen Jones finished his article on, he said all the buffoons with microphones will shut up for a few months, which means he's a massive fan. He must be a fan. Because he thinks all the others are buffoons.
Does that mean his podcast is going to continue? Because if he's just called himself and his podcasting friends a buffoon.
I will say right now, the guys at Times are not buffoons. Far from it. So they must be continuing. I hope they're continuing podcasting. Because this would be a savage blow. A savage blow. An internally savage blow.
We will keep podcasting as we do, 52 weeks of the year. And if you appreciate that, we'll support us and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.